Today on Seculo Exposed, the FBI's aggressive censorship scheme aimed at conservatives.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Have to do it. A shout out to someone who's been a star athlete that I followed most of my life, and that's Lionel Messi, finally taking home the World Cup for Argentina. So congratulations to Argentina, the Argentinian fans here in the United States, and to Messi, a well-deserved World Cup and quite an end and quite a finish between Argentina and France. We are talking today, continued information continues to come out of Twitter about this close. I mean, we're talking very close relationship between Twitter and the federal law enforcement agencies, of course, at the top of that, the FBI, but others as well. Twitter's contact with the FBI was constant and pervasive. It was almost, and this is in Matt Taibbi's own words, with this new drop of the Twitter files on Friday, it was like it was a subsidiary of federal law enforcement. Between January 2020 and November 2020, there were over 150 emails between the FBI and former Twitter trusted safety chief Yoel Roth. That's just one person at Twitter. Think about this. September 2022 exchange between Twitter's then legal executive, Stacey Cardle, and then deputy general counsel, of course, that's the former FBI general counsel, Jim Baker, who was sharing the results from her soon-to-be weekly meeting with law enforcement agencies like the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Justice, and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Of course, we have a former acting director of national intelligence on our team at the ACLJ, Rick Rennell, who will be on the broadcast later today. The Twitter executive writes, she was asked if there were going to be impediments for the law enforcement agencies to be sharing classified info with the Twitter team. And the FBI was adamant that there were no impediments to sharing exist. So it underscores this one big happy family to vibe at Twitter and the FBI to try and, again, censor conservatives and I believe, impact elections. Certainly, you look a lot at the suppression of the Hunter Biden laptop, the suppression of conservative accounts. I mean, you see through these documents that are released, for instance, that come in through various sources, including even, like, I think it was after the election, right? And we're looking at one on right before the election, November 5th, 2022, a list of the FBI sent saying, hey, look at these accounts. One of them, most of them are just people's names. One is Right Side Broadcasting, which is known for broadcasting President Trump's events and rallies. No secret. You can go find out all about them online. It's not like it takes a lot of work at the FBI to do that. But they put it there, and this is what is wild, that they were looking for any location information associated with the accounts that Twitter would voluntarily provide to aid the FBI in assigning any follow-up deemed necessary or appropriate by an FBI field office. They wanted to be able to visit these individuals, most of them private citizens, some of them, one of them a broadcast news network, online news network. And you know what's interesting here is, one, they're looking for the location, the privacy violation. But the second part is that misinformation is not a crime that the FBI investigates to bring to the DOJ as a crime. I mean, think about that. I want to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. There's so much in the news about free speech, about Twitter. There's a lot more to talk about here. 1-800-684-3110. And of course, as we approach the end of the year, first let me say Happy Hanukkah to those who celebrated the first night of Hanukkah last night. And of course, as we get close to the Christmas holiday, we encourage you to support the work financially of the ACLJ at aclj.org. We've got a FOIA going out on this very information about the law enforcement and social media. So we are working till the end of the year on this very issue. Support our work. Double the impact your donation with our matching challenge, ACLJ.org. You know, something our producer Will just pointed out to me, and I think it's important to point out to all of you, is a lot of this, you know, we focus on the election in the 2020 and Hunter Biden's laptop. And we kind of think that, okay, since then, maybe the FBI, the DOJ, and Twitter, that the relationship wasn't as strong, and that was really about that election. But let me take you to an email that was released just on Friday evening with this latest dump of news from the Twitter files. This was sent from the FBI on November 10th of 2022. So just about a month ago, after the election. Okay. And what does the email say? Hello, Twitter contacts. FBI San Francisco is notifying you of the below account, which may potentially constitute violation of Twitter's terms of service for any action or inaction deemed inappropriate within Twitter policy. And literally, it is just people's names for Twitter accounts. But I want to underscore, this is this year post-election. So this was not ending just because of the Hunter Biden laptop in 2020 or the midterm election even that occurred earlier in November. The FBI was still treating Twitter like a subsidiary, and that's what Matt Taibbi has kind of summed it up as, what it feels like there, even after the election, really until Elon Musk started exposing this. And so treating them like they're part of the FBI. Here you go. Here's a list. Do what you will with it. But again, there's a lot of pressure there because of that Section 230 immunity given through the Communications Decency Act. I want to go to Harry Hutchinson here because, Harry, what this underscores is that the FBI and federal law enforcement in the U.S. saw Twitter. We don't know about the other social media networks because they're not being exposed. But we know they saw Twitter as a place to go where they could basically direct Twitter to censor accounts they did not like.
I think that's precisely correct. So Twitter, in the eyes of the FBI, was simply a wholly owned subsidiary. And what we have and what Matt Taibbi has exposed is a conspiracy. I would argue a conspiracy to violate the constitutional and statutory rights of American citizens. And then we now have a recently released statement by the FBI. So in response to being caught with its pants down, the FBI now states that the FBI regularly engages with private sector entities to provide information specific to identified foreign malign influence actors, subversive, undeclared, covert, or criminal activities. This statement is quite simply, in my opinion, a lie, because the FBI routinely went after American citizens. And in my opinion, the FBI knew they were American citizens. They went after Billy Baldwin, an actor, for tweeting a joke about the elections. They went after American Right Side, which basically produces YouTube videos about Trump rallies. And so what we are talking about here is the suppression, arguably, of Americans' free speech rights. Arguably, what we've seen by the FBI is a suppression of the vote by the FBI, and yet the FBI and Twitter keep proudly proclaiming that they are after other actors, malign actors that are suppressing the vote. The FBI is doing precisely what it claims other actors are doing. And so I think at the end of the day, the real question is, where are the Republicans? Where is the outrage from Mitch McConnell and other actors? Are they simply standing by and waiting? There is clear and unmistakable evidence of misconduct, and it demands action, and it demands action now. Meanwhile, Mitch McConnell is simply cooperating with Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're waiting to see the types, for instance, the Jim Jordan types, Bill Hagerty types, our friends that are friends of our broadcast who have called this out before and have spoken openly about it before, this censorship. And they're just about to, especially the House, just about to get into a next level of power. In fact, that reminds me to let you all know that my dad, Jay Secchio, and I are going to be hosting Sean Hannity's radio broadcast tomorrow. So the full 3 hours of Sean's broadcast, we'll be bringing in folks like Jim Jordan and folks from the ACLJ team, but folks from, of course, outside, members of Congress, both the House and the Senate, to talk about all of these issues. So you definitely want to tune in to the Hannity broadcast tomorrow. We appreciate Sean for letting us take over the show tomorrow, the full 3 hours. So definitely tune into that. We'll get you more information about it, of course, later on today and tomorrow. We'll be back on the air with our broadcast and then with the Hannity broadcast as well. So we appreciate that from Sean. You know, what was interesting to me and also troubling to me, Harry, was that in this latest email, or one of the latest emails that was sent just a day before the election of the midterm election, November 5th of 2022, they asked for location info. And they say that it's because we might need to, we being the FBI, might need to show up to some of these individuals' houses or homes or workplaces.
But the missing predicate is criminal misconduct.
Right.
So there is no misconduct for the FBI to investigate. Meanwhile, where is the FBI with respect to investigating child sex trafficking? Where's the FBI with respect to going after individuals, malign individuals who have crossed our borders illegally over the past several months? And it's more likely than not we will see an additional infusion of illegals going forward if Title 42 is invalidated. So the FBI, in my opinion, simply hasn't done its job. The FBI has participated, along with other intelligence agencies, in telling the American people that the Hunter Biden laptop story was foreign misinformation. That was simply a lie on steroids, and I think the American people have come to realize it. So I think at the end of the day, it is increasingly difficult for the American people to trust the FBI on anything.
And you know, you have to wonder, remember, we're getting this because Elon Musk bought Twitter. Mark Zuckerberg isn't providing us this information through Facebook. We're not getting this through other social media platforms, whether it's the Instagrams, the Facebooks, even, of course, the TikToks of the world either. So you have to wonder and also imagine that if they were utilizing Twitter this way and had this close relationship, well, Mark Zuckerberg has talked about that relationship before publicly, that they were doing similar actions with those social media platforms and had those cozy relationships. I mean, the fact that they even were, what this uncovered is that they were sharing classified information with Twitter employees at a time when, you know, we're thinking about criminal charges against a former president for having documents that may be linked as, may be marked as classified that he may or may have not accidentally taken with him when the president leaves office and they take all of their files. And in the return process, they're talking about criminal charges there potentially, but yet they were handling classified information with Twitter employees.
It doesn't make any sense, but the evidence that we've seen so far, and there's more evidence to come, it demands the appointment of a special counsel or special prosecutor to basically go out and investigate what? The FBI. Keep in mind that we have evidence on the record that the FBI lied to FISA judges. We have information online that the FBI basically paid foreigners to provide misinformation which would warrant the issuance of a FISA warrant against individuals like Carter Page. So I think at the end of the day, the FBI needs to be reconstituted, needs to be reformed, and I don't think that can happen with the current management.
You know, remember, I remind people this too. Last week, we talked about the number of FBI former employees and DOJ employees that went over to places like Twitter. Like Jim Baker was one of like 20. And were they taking with them security clearances that then would allow them to get this classified info from the current FBI and thus kind of subverting the normal process, which is that a private corporation would not be able to handle classified information, but they brought in basically the top level of the FBI that would have those clearances. So is that how they were getting around this? I mean, that's how committed they were to this program of censorship. That's all it was about, was a program of censorship, and not necessarily of just high-profile individuals, but people, just random people. You can look through the files yourself and look at these screen names. These are just regular folks. They weren't blue checkmark individuals necessarily. We're going to continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. In the next segment of the broadcast, we're going to Israel. Jeff Balaban, who oversees ACLJ Jerusalem, is going to be joining us live there for an update on what is happening in Israel with this latest threat from Mahmoud Abbas of violence and terror against Israelis. Support the work of the ACLJ. It's why we have our office, ACLJ Jerusalem. It's because of your financial support. Donate today at ACLJ.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Secular. We're taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Right now we're trying to connect with our office in Jerusalem, ACLJ Jerusalem, with Jeff Balaban. And the reason there is because of these new threats from the Palestinian Authority to start a campaign of terror against Israeli citizens. So we're going to talk about that with Jeff. I do want to take your phone calls, though, on Twitter and on the social media censorship. So get those in now, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Because I think what we have to understand here is that this censorship level, one, it was not planning to end just after, 2020 or after 2022. I mean, we have emails now going up to through 2022 post-midterm election, just about a month ago, about, hey, get us location info on these accounts. I mean, how much does that make you rethink your whole social media, kind of where you are online and how you utilize social media accounts online? I'd love to take your calls on that at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. If you didn't catch it too, tomorrow we're going to be doing our regular broadcast, but we're also, my dad will be back in the studio with me, Jay Sekulow, and we're going to be hosting Sean Hannity's radio broadcast as well. So we'll do our show and then Sean's show in the afternoon. We appreciate Sean letting us do that. We have a great guest that'll be coming up on that show. We'll announce those tomorrow, maybe during our show, so you know who's coming up and how to tune in and where to tune in. But we really, I think that will be great to have that extra time to talk to you tomorrow. We appreciate Sean letting us take over the show tomorrow. Jeff is joining us now live from Israel, and Jeff is Israelis celebrate Hanukkah. We have seen a new threat through Mahmoud Abbas, who I believe is 87 years old, but a threat to return to terror if Israel continues its current actions. It was pretty vague, but I have a feeling its current actions, Jeff, are targeted at, the language he uses, targeted at a lot of the groups that we work with there in Judea and Samaria.
Yes, Jordan. What's happening here on the ground is, as Prime Minister, well, former Prime Minister and potentially future Prime Minister Netanyahu gets closer to forming his government, and he's forming his government with a group that is unabashedly pro-Israel, as it should be, as opposed to the recent government until now had other elements in it. It was a combined, it's a pro-Israel government generally, but there were certain elements that were actually Muslim Brotherhood. It's a strange world of Israeli coalition. But as they're moving towards one that's more firmly for security and peace and strength, Abbas is getting more and more angry at it because he doesn't want security or peace or strength. He loves being the billionaire leader of a terrorist group. And so he's threatening to, quote, go back to terror, as we've discussed, as you discussed on air earlier this week, or last week with Mike Pompeo. And, of course, we know they never really departed from terror, but this is what he does. Anytime something happens he doesn't like politically, he threatens violence and terror. And this then, in turn, causes the left, throughout the world and in America, to try and pressure Israel to once again give in to the terrorists.
You know, Jeff, when this kind of threat occurs, we see this around election times. We see this when you see a strong leader like Netanyahu return. What is it like on the ground in Israel? I think that people always want to sense that. Are Israelis concerned that does Mahmoud Abbas have the power to turn on that kind of terror again?
I think it's always a fact of life here. And it's truly the case that there are certain areas in Israel where people gauge whether or not they're going to travel. Maybe they'll travel there during the day and not the night. And, you know, people are constantly paying attention to whether or not things are going to, quote, heat up again or not. But, you know, it is the nature of life here since the founding of the state and before. It's always been under the threat of terror. And the fact is that it was under Netanyahu that it was pushed back. And the fact is that it was under other right-wing governments where strong measures were taken to stop the terrorism that there really was some semblance of peace and security, not only for the Israelis, but also on the other side, for the Palestinians as well.
You know, Jeff, the second part to this, too, is as we come to this year end, and I wanted to give you kind of an opportunity to speak to one, for Americans, does it look like it is going to be the Netanyahu government as prime minister? And two, just to describe the kind of variety of work that we do in Israel through ACLJ Jerusalem, because their financial support goes to that mission.
Yeah, sure. Listen, it could not be more important, the work that we do here, I think, and maybe I shouldn't be the one saying it because I'm doing a lot of it, but the truth is, it's the same way it's hard for Americans to understand the Israeli system, even though there's so many commonalities culturally, it's hard for Israelis to understand the American system, including at the highest level. So we work in Washington to help decision makers in Congress, in administrations, and actually in other groups, understand what's happening here on the ground in Israel. We work here in Israel to help them understand the pressures there, because honestly, it's, you know, the media is spinning a story. No one knows what to believe. I'll give you an example. So one of the groups I've been working with lately is a group they call in Hebrew the Bichronistim, which means security. It's a group of, at this point, I think over 15,000 former IDF police and other security officers, commanders, and they are overwhelmingly in favor. This whole organization is in favor of a strong Netanyahu government with the more right-wing groups that support Jewish life in Judea and Samaria. But of course, the media doesn't want to talk about them. The media wants to find a couple of people who work for Mossad who are hardcore leftists, just the way they find people at the CIA or the FBI who are hardcore leftists, and we know exactly how this game is played. So the work that we do here is to get past the noise and get to really what's actually happening in Washington and in Jerusalem, on the ground in America and on the ground in Israel.
You know, that is great. And Jeff, just kind of a reminder to folks too there, having that presence on the ground, especially when there's this new government and we're able to work with these new government coalitions, and you're also able to continue the relationships that you've been working on in places like Judea and Samaria, when those threats goes out from Mahmoud Abbas, those are relationships that we have built over the years.
Absolutely. You know, thank God we have built good relationships. And you know what? It really is a mirror image. The same way we have relationships in Washington that are decades old and deep and truly a level of trust that doesn't exist in most places. That's the kind of relationships we have here with a lot of the people who are going to be in this government. And by the way, with people who were in the last government, people who are in Knesset, you know, the largest caucus in the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, is called the Land of Israel Caucus. Well, it's the caucus of those who support Jewish sovereignty in Judea and Samaria. And obviously, that's a big issue for us at ACLJ. We believe strongly in that, and not merely because it's a philosophical or religious idea. It's because the fact is, it's what saves lives. It's Israeli strength and sovereignty is what makes life better for everyone on the ground in Judea and Samaria, Jewish, Christian, Muslim. It's just better that way. And we have cut through all the nonsense being spun by politicians and media, and that direct conduit is irreplaceable.
And we'll continue to do that. Jeff, I appreciate you joining us live from Israel. Jeff oversees ACLJ Jerusalem, our office there. We have that office there. We have that staff there because of your financial support of the American Center for Law and Justice. We have a matching challenge right now where you can double the impact of your donation. You know what that means? If you donate $30, we have a donor who will match that with an additional $30. So it's like $60 for us at the ACLJ. Donate today. at aclj.org. Be part of that matching challenge. We got a second half hour of this broadcast coming up with Rick Rennell. A lot to talk about. We'll be right back.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. Next segment, we're joined live by Rick Rennell. We'll be talking about some of the Title 42 mess. The U.S. leaving the door open now again. Here we go again for nuclear negotiations with Iran as his, you know, as a former ambassador to Germany and former acting director of national intelligence. Great to have him on the ACLJ team to comment on that. I am going to ask about this as well, too. We're not going to know until after our broadcast today, but we will certainly be talking about it on our broadcast tomorrow. The January 6th committee holds their final hearing today, and they are going to make criminal referrals. The Washington Post is reporting that they will be making three criminal referrals just against former President Donald Trump. We don't know who else. I mean, you can kind of start a guessing game of other individuals they may be making these referrals to. Now, that does not mean that those individuals will immediately be criminally prosecuted. That goes to the Department of Justice. And the Department of Justice then has the discretion about whether or not to move forward with those prosecutions, with those referrals. And it gets even a little more complicated now because you have a special counsel in place. So likely the referrals would go to that special counsel, who would then decide whether or not this was the right time to bring charges, or are they working on some other kind of charges, or do they not want to bring any charges against the former president at all? But let me tell you this, folks, what the Democrats are committed to, and we still see, is bringing criminal charges somehow, some way, against President Trump. And they are not giving up until their final moments of power here and their final hearing, when they will make that announcement. They will vote on those referrals. Again, that doesn't guarantee prosecution, but with this Department of Justice, who appointed a special counsel, I mean, it's certainly, it's not like having a divided government where if you had a Republican president, let's say, and a Republican DOJ getting this from a totally partisan committee, even, you know, with the two former Republicans, I would call them on that, Kissinger and Cheney, making these referrals. Then again, you know, like the Obama administration would get these all the time. They did not take action on them from the House or from the Senate Republicans. This is different. This is Democrat to Democrat. So you have to take it that much more seriously. As absurd as you may believe it is, we know this is likely coming, and it's coming this afternoon. So we'll get, it's going to be great to have my dad back in the studio with us tomorrow to get a full analysis of whatever actions the committee takes with these referrals, go through that process. Of course, we'll have the additional 3 hours as we host the Sean Hannity program together. Both my dad and I will be doing that tomorrow as well. So you want to tune in for that. We'll announce who we've got as special guest for that tomorrow on our broadcast. But again, we're going to talk about this with Rick Rennell too. This is kind of breaking news right now, and I don't want to get too far ahead of it because I think the committee could surprise us with other folks too. I mean, there's going to be other names here. I don't think it's just going to be Donald Trump. He's obviously going to be the most high profile as a former president, and it looks like they're looking at three different charges, one related to insurrection, one relating to, I think it was what he did after the violence occurred. And then, of course, one is probably cooperation or non-cooperation potentially with the committee. Was there obstruction there? But again, that's just assuming. We will really have to look at, again, what the committee actually does this afternoon. This was the dangerous part about this committee, is that now that they've got a special counsel and they've got this power, this is ultimately what they can do, other than issue a report, is make criminal referrals. Now, again, I want to underscore, criminal referrals do not guarantee, and they don't trigger automatic prosecution. But what they can do, when you have a Democrat appointed special counsel and a Democrat DOJ, and this is coming from a Democrat-led committee, there's certainly a lot more pressure to take action if the DOJ sees an ability. I think if they think that they can actually bring the charges, they will. They're going to have to do some real searching to see if they are going to be able to be successful But I think if they think they can be successful, I expect them to bring the charges. What will the outrage be like amongst Americans? That will be interesting. We'll talk about that with Rick Grenell. We come back on Seculo. Seculo. Yesterday was International Migrants Day, and Secretary Blinken, Secretary of State, tweeted out, "On International Migrants Day, we recognize the rights, contributions, and journeys of migrants worldwide through State PRM, that is the Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration, and our partners. The United States is working to protect migrants and promote safe, orderly, and humane migration globally." Now I want to go right to Rick Grenell, our senior advisor for foreign policy and national security, because Rick, when I see that statement and I look at our own southern border, where we do not, where we have unsafe, disordered, and inhumane migration occurring at our border.
And it's certainly not orderly, right? I mean, orderly means that there would be an order and a line and a process. And that's what we have right now, are people jumping the line. Look, there is this radical element within the idea of refugees. I remember I spent 8 years at the UN. And this radical element wants to believe that there should be total movement of people without rules and regulations, and that people should just be able to pick up and move to any country they want. There shouldn't be visas. There shouldn't be rules. There shouldn't be any citizenship. And I think that's a real radical principle, and certainly makes countries very unsafe. We saw what happened when that started to happen in Europe. Certainly that was one of Chancellor Merkel's big problems. It created Brexit. And now we see in the United States a similar situation where Democrats have completely put their head in the sand about our southern border. That is not going to end well. We certainly don't want to have a situation like Europe had, which was one part of the European Union saying, we're out of here. If you can't enforce these rules, we're out of here. So Brexit is one of those things that happened because there weren't any rules. Let's make sure that we don't have those problems in the United States.
And then we add to that, he sends this tweet out, and if you don't think it's bad enough now, wake up on Wednesday morning when Title 42 is gone, Rick, and we have thousands of migrants who have been waiting, I mean, tens of thousands of migrants that have been waiting for this moment to make the illegal border cross.
Look, I saw recently people criticizing Joe Biden in the White House saying, you better get down there before Wednesday. You better go and show some sort of support and see the situation. We noted that he was just in Arizona and didn't go down to the border. And I think the question came to a White House official. And she said, well, look, the problem is if the president of the United States goes to the border, everything stops. And so we didn't want to go to the border. And I thought to myself, boy, if everything stops, maybe he should go live and work at the border, because we certainly would like to see everything stop.
Yeah, I mean, this idea that, again, they send out tweets like this, like everything's fine in the world. And yet we have probably one of the worst migrant crises in the world happening on our border. Maybe number two would be what's going on with Ukraine and Russia and Ukrainians, but even that has calmed down to some extent. We are about to ramp up and see record numbers. The drugs come in. Not just the people who are seeking better economic situations, but the bad actors who utilize these situations could be terrorists, could be the drug cartels, and it could be as well as just overwhelming. I mean, El Paso is declaring a state of emergency because Title 42 is coming to a close. I want to get to a couple more topics with you, Rick. One that seemed like, with all the protesting in Iran and with their attacks on women specifically and the uproar we saw in Iran, that the Iranian nuclear deal and trying to extend that deal or trying to re-engage that deal by the U.S. was kind of put to bed. And now there's new reports that the door is still open. What are your thoughts on that? Are they buying into this Iranian propaganda that, oh, the headscarves don't matter anymore?
You know, it's really troublesome because when you look at the press reports that are describing exactly what you were talking about, specifically, I'll just say Reuters, They keep quoting anonymous sources within the United States government saying that, you know, we can totally hold them to account, hold them, the Iranian government, to account. But at the same time, we should pursue this new deal and cut a deal, cut some sort of a deal with the Iranian government. And I just say that those individuals who are quietly pushing this idea, they need to come out of the woodwork, because they are not paying attention to history. What we do know is that the Israelis caught the Iranian government lying about the number of centrifuges, lying about just how much they have enriched, lying about the heavy water amounts that they're using. And this is something that I think the Biden administration, specifically the Iran team, are ignoring. They're still assuming that the Iranian government is telling the truth, and therefore we can cut this new deal and negotiate with them. They are not good faith actors. We realize that. And let me just finish by saying, shame on anyone who wants to start negotiating with Iran right now, as Iran is selling drones to Russia, who is clearly causing chaos in Ukraine and pushing a war, a deadly war. You, if you're going to deal with the Iranians, are also giving the Russians aid and comfort in their quest for more war.
Finally, to January 6th, I want to hit a few topics with you, Rick, while I got you today. And we now know that the panel, the January 6th panel, this is their final hearing today, and they're going to be making criminal referrals. And the most high profile that are being discussed, they haven't been made yet. They probably will be shortly after this broadcast this afternoon. And we'll analyze them again tomorrow. But we suspect that they will be making referrals to charge President Trump criminally for three different referrals there. Now, the DOJ doesn't have to act on it, but this is certainly a DOJ that seems like they've been waiting and hoping for a reason to bring charges against President Trump. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think for sure they're going to recommend that, because they've just held, you know, primetime hearings, an investigative arm of Congress without a single dissenting voice. The entire J6 committee is one voice. And we're not supposed to have investigative committees like that. We're not supposed to have Congress putting together some sort of a investigation where you're looking at a former president of the United States and you select every single person on that committee that believes the same way. It's totally partisan. It's a kangaroo court. It looks really ridiculous for the United States Congress to be pushing this. And that's exactly why Kevin McCarthy, thank God, has said that he will end it immediately. You can't have an investigative arm where everybody agrees and it's just one partisan side of the aisle. I mean, that's crazy.
No, especially when you're talking about criminal referrals and something as serious as that. Finally, Rick, too, just with this shakeup of kind of what to expect for folks as we get into the new year with the new Congress, do you think finally we'll get a clear shakeup of House leadership so that they can get to work on those important issues and investigations that we need them to get to work on?
Look, there's one thing that I know is that the base, and you know, probably that includes a lot of our listeners, we're really frustrated. I spent a lot of time going through campaigns, grassroots level campaigning throughout Wisconsin and Michigan and Nevada and Arizona and a whole bunch of other places. And I hear constantly conservatives are frustrated that we have leadership in Washington, D.C. that doesn't listen to us. We want to see consequences for some of this stuff, for debanking conservatives, for canceling conservatives, for going after parents, for the FBI trying to shut down dissenting voices, working with big tech to collude during an election. Let's be really clear about something. Our government, the FBI and other agencies, worked hard to interfere in the 2020 election on behalf of Democrats and Joe Biden. That is shocking. And if our leaders on the Republican side don't do something about it, they should be thrown out of office.
You know what, Rick, too, we're seeing that through these Twitter releases that they did it again in 2022. is that they were doing the same, the FBI, Jim Baker, those same actors, and they brought in a number of FBI and DOJ officials to Twitter to do just that. I mean, they were sharing classified information with Twitter, asking for people's locations. These are just average citizens, not the blue check marks.
They're going to continue doing this in 24 unless we stop them. And that's why the grassroots are demanding action from the new Congress. They better start acting.
And folks, we're ready to go on this. Rick, appreciate you joining us and being part of our team at the ACLJ. We're already filing FOIA work. We're kind of like setting the stage for the new Congress. So we're getting the information that we can then share with them, the Jim Jordans of the world who are going to be leading these investigations. So we're starting that work now. We already have been starting that work a year ago, so we can start providing it to Congress so that they've got a head start as well. Because as Rick said, we only really know about Twitter. What about those other social media companies that are going to continue to do this in the future if we don't get a handle on it and start real investigations? Support our work at ACLJ.org. Be part of our matching challenge. It's why we have Rick Rennell on our team. It's because of your financial support. ACLJ.org. Donate today. We'll be right back on Seculo. Set for you too what to expect tomorrow, and then I want to get into an ACLJ case specifically that is about life or death, literally, out of Pakistan. But just to get you kind of up to speed, one is that there is a report from Axios just out now that the GOP may have their own January 6th report. There was always this talk that there was a shadow committee kind of going through the same evidence that was being provided and the same information, going through all the testimony, and that they would issue a report as well. So we might actually see two reports issued, one by the January 6th committee and one by the GOP, like a shadow committee as well. Second, we're going to be looking to the criminal referrals that are going to be made by, there's also going to be ethics referrals made against members of Congress, but criminal referrals, and the most high profile of which will likely be three made against Donald Trump, that the January 6th committee will refer to the Department of Justice. Now, that does not require the Department of Justice to take any action at all. They could totally ignore it, but they could certainly utilize it as they build a case through their new special counsel. Remember, they've got a new special counsel there investigating this. I would imagine that all goes to him. So we'll walk through all of that with my dad when he joins us back on the broadcast. And then we're going to be hosting, so we'll have even more time to talk about these issues with a lot of special guests. We're going to be hosting Sean Hannity's radio broadcast tomorrow. All 3 hours of that broadcast, both my dad and I will be doing that. So again, there'll be a lot of opportunity for us to get into the issues tomorrow and with some high profile folks as well. So you definitely want to tune in to our radio show tomorrow. Learn more about then what we've got planned for Sean Hannity's show. We appreciate him and his team thinking of us and letting us kind of take over his show for this Tuesday. Let me turn to this ACLJ issue just in the final minutes of the broadcast today. We need your prayers and we need your support. The ACLJ just lodged a complaint with the United Nations in a major case in Pakistan where a young Christian man, this is a case our Center for Legal Aid there, which is our organization there in Pakistan, has handled. A young Christian man was sentenced to execution by hanging for his faith, stemming from false accusation when he was merely 16 years old, and he sits on death row today. Our affiliate, the Organization for Legal Aid, is representing Shazad Masih. In July of 2017, Shazad was working at a local hospital as a janitor when a Muslim co-worker named Ahmad Jalali, who was a prominent member of an aggressive Muslim sect, started a religious conversation telling Shazad about Muslim prophets and asking him questions about the Christian prophets. Shazad responded that he did not know much about religion, but would ask his father. And when Jalali told Shazad about the prophet Muhammad, Shazad told Jalali that his father had a friend named Ali who makes derogatory remarks when he hears anyone's name that has Muhammad in it. Again, this is a young, kind of uneducated guy who said, I don't know much about religion. Oh, but when I hear this name, this person doesn't say nice things. Jalali becomes upset. This is the other coworker who kind of walked him into this, called Shazad, his father's friend's names, and he left. Later that evening, Shazad is summoned to a mobile phone shop located near the hospital, where dozens of men from a Muslim group, again, TTIP, the radical group, which means Movement to Protect Islam, and they were angry at him. So they got him there, suckered him in there, and they asked Shahzad what he said to Jalali. Scared for his life, Shahzad told him that he had told Jalali that his father's friend uses derogatory words when he has heard names that have Muhammad in it. Instead of accusing Ali, the group of men took Shahzad to a nearby madrasa, which is an Islamic religious school, and handed him over to the police. The police then filed a blasphemy case against Shahzad. He was found guilty in Pakistan. So we are fighting this jointly two ways. In the Pakistani courts, as best we can to prevent. He has been sentenced to death, by hanging. He was only 16 years old when this occurred. Now he's in his 20s. He's been in prison this entire time. And again, it shows you how the persecution of a Christian, of a Christian who even says, I don't know a lot about religion, I'm not, you know, but it's being set up by a radical Muslim coworker just so they can accuse them of blasphemy and ultimately, I think, scare more Christians in Pakistan by getting him sentenced to death. There is no reason under any law that Shahzad Mazin should be sentenced to death for what he did, conversations he had as a 17-year-old janitor at a hospital. Now, we're there. The ACLJ is on the ground with that family, Shahzad and his family. Because of your financial support of the ACLJ, we're able to be there for the family. These are critical cases when it comes to human rights and when it comes to our Christian brothers and sisters around the world. You know, when we're celebrating, and really celebrations have already begun, of the Christmas holiday and the birth of our Savior, we have to remember that so many of our Christian brothers and sisters around the world are targeted just because they happen to be Christian. They may admittedly be young, teenagers, working as a janitor, and say to a colleague, I don't know a lot about religion. I've been raised Christian, but I'm not a scholar. And then they use those remarks to then take them to the police, accuse them of blasphemy, and now his life hangs in the balance, literally. So we are doing everything we can at the ACLJ. We've now taken action at the UN in a major filing there. We're going to continue to work on the ground in Pakistan as well. But I say this just as a reminder during this week as we, as Christmas falls on this coming Sunday. To one, pray for our Christian brothers and sisters. You know, we get kind of used to this in the ACLJ, and you might too as an ACLJ supporter because you see our emails, you see the updates about our work that we do overseas in places where Christians are being persecuted. But this is just happens. We have to fight for every one of our Christian brothers and sisters, especially when we're given an opportunity to, when we have the resources, when we have the skills, when we have the knowledge, when we have the finances, and we have to put all that together. So, of course, we ask for you to pray for this family who is facing just unbelievably uphill battle here. Pray for our team who is fighting to see justice be done, that he is released and ultimately not executed because he was a young teenage Christian that radical Muslims in Pakistan targeted, twisted his words to then get a blasphemy conviction where he has been sentenced to death and on death row for 5 years. And it goes right directly to our work at the ACLJ. Some of our work is on domestic policy that's very important here. Some of our work is, like in Israel, we had Jeff Balaban on, where those could be life and death issues when it comes to national security. Certainly the border. But remember our Christians and brothers and sisters this holiday season. And I know that there are many of you who support the ACLJ because of the work we do on behalf of persecuted Christians, our brothers and sisters around the world. Let this case be a reminder that they are being persecuted as we speak. As we celebrate in a country of freedom, they are on death row because of their faith in Christ. So support the work of the ACLJ if you can. I know people are under financial constraints right now. It's a great time to do it, though, because even if you have to cut back on how much you can donate We have a matching challenge, so your donation is doubled. The impact of your donation. Donate today at aclj.org. Be part of our matching challenge. We will talk to you tomorrow on Seculum.